Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome to another great Wednesday on Catholic Answers Live. A couple of great guests for you today. We start with a pro-life open forum. If you have questions about life, whether it's at its beginnings or its endings or maybe when it's in crisis in the middle of life, those questions are all welcome today. 888-318-7884 is the number. Maybe you're not a convinced pro-life person and you'd like some justification from us about why we are pro-life people, we'd be happy to answer those questions as well. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is international pro-life speaker Stephanie Gray. She's the co-founder of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, where she spent 12 years as the executive director. She's the author of Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth, as well as A Physician's Guide to Discussing Abortion. She holds a certification with distinction in healthcare ethics from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Stephanie Gray, thanks for being with us. Hi, Stephanie. Are you there?
I am.
Oh, yes. I had a little sound problem. That's all right. Okay. So, I assume you – I'm just going to assume this. Maybe I shouldn't assume this. Maybe I shouldn't assume things about you. But I'm assuming you may have participated in some pro-life activities this week.
Yes. Well, you assume correctly if you saw my Facebook page. I was in three American marches. I started speaking at the march in St. Augustine, Florida, which was about just over a week ago. And then I flew to Washington, D.C. and spoke at the March for Life conference the day before the march in D.C. And then the next day I flew to Phoenix, Arizona, where they had 5,000 people marching there. So it was a joy to participate in so many important American events.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Something I noticed, and perhaps this is cynical, I don't know, but it seemed to me that protests of another nature on the same weekend. They were protests having usually called women's marches or that kinds of thing. And you know, God bless them. People protest all kinds of things, but it just seemed to me I'm not fussing about their protests or their observations, but it didn't seem to me that you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pro-life people coming out around the country got nearly the attention. Did you notice that discrepancy?
Absolutely. There's a serious imbalance there. You have, 400,000 pro-lifers in D.C. and very minimal secular media coverage, of course. Faith-based coverage was very good. EWTN had live coverage all day. But in terms of the broad secular media, there definitely is a bias against pro-life people and in favor of those who support abortion, as we saw with the coverage of the women's march the following
888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. I'm still having just a little bit of trouble hearing Stephanie. Maybe we'll have to switch phone lines. I'm not sure, Stephanie, what we'll have to do. But there's also, I suppose, it's kind of a positive in some of the way the media coverage happened, because I noticed this year a lot of debate about whether pro-life women were really women, I guess, is a way to – like there's a certain sense of it's like, well, no, it's the women's march women who are the real women, you know, those advocating for abortion. And I thought it provided a lot of opportunity to push back on that and say, no, in fact, most women are not pro-abortion, and lots of intelligent, accomplished women are pro-life.
Well, certainly you even look at the lineup of speakers at a lot of pro-life events. You know, Tim Tebow's mother, Pam, gave a presentation both in D.C. as well as Phoenix, where I was, talking about making a very pro-life decision in a crisis pregnancy, and that when she was pregnant with Tim, there were health complications that were super serious. And she nonetheless carried through with that testing and the mercy and provision. And there are so many female pro-life leaders who make valuable contributions to the cause, for sure.
888-318-7884. It is Pro-Life Open Forum today. Pro-Life Open Forum means any question that you have about the ethics of life in its earliest stages, life in its end stages, or life throughout. We're happy to take those calls, 888-318-7884. I will remind you that Sanctity of Life Month is this month. Marches have happened in most places and continue to happen in some places. And in honor of that, we want to send you a couple of books for very, very, well, for virtually nothing, $5 for Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issues, Trent Horn's wonderful book about talking about life issues, and then Making the Case for Life, the video that that covers much of the same ground. All of that is available for 70% off. That's just $5 each at shop.catholic.com. Go to shop.catholic.com. Already lots of calls. Stephanie, you feel maybe we'll take a call before we go to the break?
Sure. Let's go straight to the lines.
All right. Let's go to Diana in Huntington Beach, California, listening on Catholic radio up there. Diana, your question.
Okay, so it's actually Dana, but no offense taken.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't read that properly, I suppose.
No worries. Listen, here's my kind of question, is that I know that from listening to Catholic radio that Catholics are really opposed to gay marriage, but at the same time, we do have large numbers of gay people in the United States getting married. And my question is should we be looking at those marriages as a potential help in resolving the problem of abortion by creating a system where pregnant women who are going to get an abortion would maybe be introduced and create a government-sponsored business arrangement with gay married people who have been properly screened to adopt those children who would otherwise be aborted? And I look at the gay community as, why are they even pro-choice? They are very strong pro-choice advocates, and you have to ask yourself why. They don't have unwanted pregnancies in that community. And I feel that they're pro-choice because of the concept of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they vote pro-choice as a way of kind of fighting back against what they feel is oppression by the pro-life movement. And I think this olive branch should be extended to them to say, hey, you might be part of the solution, and convert them from pro-choice advocates to pro-life advocates by really coming out and asking them, how about raising some of these children that would otherwise be killed by their own mothers?
All right, Dana, thank you. Stephanie?
Yeah, it's a very interesting point, Dana. And you know what comes to mind is, I think the issue is not that there aren't people available and willing to adopt children who would otherwise be aborted. The issue is their mothers don't want to opt for adoption. They want abortion, because adoption is the hardest option, in that in the moment, you're going to fall in love with that child. You're going to bond with that child. You're going to want that child. And then you're going to place that child in the arms of someone else. And that's really hard. Whereas abortion says, I'm going to get rid of you before I bond with you, before I connect with you. And therefore, that seems easier in the moment in the woman's mind than adoption does. So I would say, you know, trying to increase the number of people, such as appealing to homosexual couples to choose adoption, isn't actually going to solve the problem, because it's a problem of the mindset of the woman in crisis, where she needs to be convinced that abortion isn't the solution to her problem. There already are couples waiting to adopt children. And in many of these cases, if the woman opts against abortion, she many times won't even opt for those couples to adopt. She'll just parent the child herself.
Dana, thank you very much for that question. We have to head off to a break right now. Stephanie Gray is our guest. Stephanie is the author of Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. It's a pro-life open forum, so if you have a question about the pro-life position in any stage of life, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
This is Dale Alquist of the American Chesterton Society, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a couple of very special offers for all of you interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and my DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a saving of over 70%. I wrote this book and I made this DVD specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue and give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds, so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or my DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Pro-Life Open Forum this hour with Stephanie Gray, the author of, several things, including A Physician's Guide to Discussing Abortion and Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. Love Unleashes Life also happens to be the name of her website. If you want to find out all about what Stephanie is up to and get all kinds of materials you can use there, just go to loveunleasheslife.com. Stephanie, as I was telling you at the break, every single line is full, so I think we just work our way through callers. Joaquin in Las Vegas, Nevada, listening to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Your question for Stephanie Gray.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, it occurred to me, I've never really known the official Catholic position on the death penalty. And then the question of, is it incongruent to be pro-life and then believe in the death penalty? So kind of related question there.
Very good question. I would say that if you look at something like abortion, that is always wrong because it's directly and intentionally ending the life of an innocent human being. But if you look at something like the death penalty, there may be cases where that could be justified on the basis that a society needs to use that amount of force in order to stop an act of aggression, in order to stop someone from being an aggressor to an individual or to society. So in that case, it's not about directly and intentionally killing an innocent person, nor is it about even directly intentionally killing a guilty person so much as stopping an aggressor from committing an act of aggression. So that means in practice, I would say that we don't really need to do the death penalty because there are ways to prevent people from being aggressors to society without actually executing them, such as, you know, placing them in prisons and so forth. But there would be an important difference between allowing force to stop an act of aggression versus something like an attack on the preborn child where there is no aggressor, there is no act of aggression.
Does that make sense to you, Joaquin?
Well, yes, I understand about the pro-life and not taking a child's life. I understand that. So I guess my question is, what is the church's position on the death penalty? You touched on that a little bit with regard to stopping an aggressor or stopping future crimes. But somebody that's been already in prison, convicted of a crime, and now has been sentenced to death, I take it from your answer that the church's position is that that's not acceptable.
You know, Sai, do you want to wade in there? I mean, you probably read more on the death penalty than I have.
Yeah. First of all, Joaquin, you should know it's a somewhat controversial topic among Catholics, and various positions are taken. But most recently, the popes, particularly and most notably Pope John Paul II, have said that there's a practical judgment to be made that if you have someone in prison and the prison system is effective in protecting society, you don't need to take anyone's life. And so it's not an absolute claim of no government can ever take the life of a prisoner, because that's not Catholic teaching. There are times when that's the only way a society could defend itself. But the basic thrust of Catholic teaching in recent years has been that modern society is able to defend itself by other means, and that this either radically reduces or eliminates the need for the death penalty.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate the answer.
Joaquin, thank you very much for that call. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We go now to Margaret in Lafayette, Louisiana, listening on 90.5 FM. Margaret, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Hi, Stephanie, and thank you all for taking my call as well. Mine is more of an end-of-life care question. So my father had had a stroke years ago, and we were told that he was brain dead. And we were advised by his physicians not to do anything extraordinary. He wasn't on life support or anything. But we did not do anything extraordinary as far as feeding and, you know, keeping an IV or anything. We just slowly let him die. Is that the right way to have handled that? I've always questioned that. What is the church's teaching on that for end of life?
Sure.
Is it did we choose to kill him? Because that is kind of the thing that I go back and forth with.
You know, I would need to know more specifics about your specific situation to be able to speak to that, but I can speak in more general terms because we don't have time to go into the fine nuances of your dad's condition, but a couple important things that need to be kept in mind. The first is that brain death refers to complete and total, irreversible cessation of the entire brain, including the brain stem. So if that is the case, then the person truly is dead. So if that was the case with your dad, he would have literally been a corpse very quickly. And it sounds like that wasn't the case. Now, there is the reality that when someone endures some type of health crisis, that it may be a crisis so severe that it is going to be the end of their life. And what the church teaches is that there's a difference between ordinary and extraordinary care. Ordinary care is not excessively burdensome and has a hope of benefit. Extraordinary care can be excessively burdensome and have no hope of benefit. And so if it's determined that a particular intervention is excessively burdensome and will not have a hope of benefit, then it is acceptable to decline that type of intervention. So, for example, if someone has had cancer and they've had multiple interventions with chemotherapy and it's not working, and there's a very low percentage that another round of chemo might help them, they can decline that. They can say, look, the cancer is taking my life. It's excessively burdensome and no hope of benefit to do another intervention. I'm going to accept death as near. So in the same way, in other conditions, if that is determined, we still have to provide basic care, ordinary care, food, water, unless those two things would cause more distress to the person based on their specific condition. So those are the general terms. If you want to go through in more detail what your dad had, just to see if there's anything that perhaps was handled improperly, I would encourage you to contact the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and their website is ncbcenter.org. And they have a phone line that you can call regarding ethical medical dilemmas, and they can provide an ethical analysis in which they have the time to go into the details of what type of condition someone may face. And so if your conscience is bothering you about anything, then I would encourage you to go through the details with them and their consult line.
Okay. Well, I feel pretty certain that probably not. We were in a Catholic hospital. So, just that being said right there, I don't think that, that would have been promoted, but it just kind of feels like, geez, did we not do something? You know, like, should we have done something and we did not?
Right.
But
yeah, and I mean,
very helpful though.
Okay, good. And I'm sorry for your loss.
Margaret, thank you very, very much for that call. It is a pro-life open forum today on Catholic Answers Live. If you have questions of a pro-life nature that you've maybe always wanted answered, or you want to know what the Catholic position is on that, or why maybe you have spotted what you think is an inconsistency in the pro-life position, any all of those questions are more than welcome. We'd be happy to talk with you about them. 888-318-7884. Stephanie Gray is our guest, and we go now to Pat in Houston, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Pat, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Okay, thanks. I don't quite see a lot of difference between the type of birth control pills that prevent ovulation and the accepted family planning process. So can you try to explain the difference? I don't believe in birth control that would kill, you know, a baby that has been conceived, but most of the birth control pills that I'm aware of just prevent ovulation altogether. So I appreciate explanation of the difference.
Sure. Well, you know, if you read the medical literature on the birth control pill, while it does speak of its primary mechanism to suppress ovulation, so there is no egg for sperm to get to if a woman is sexually active, there are other mechanisms, one of which described in the literature is to change cervical mucus to make it more difficult for sperm to get to egg. But if that mechanism fails, as it sometimes does, the third mechanism is to change the lining of the uterus to make it thinner rather than its normal thickness, so that if a woman does have breakthrough ovulation, if sperm get through the mucus to the egg, and if that new life is conceived, then the woman would have a very thin endometrium lining, the lining of the uterus, so that when that new human moves into the uterus to implant, may not be able to and could bleed out in a very early abortion. And we know women on the birth control pill have a thinner endometrium than women who aren't on the birth control pill, because we know a woman on the pill has a lighter period than a woman not on the pill, which is indicative of a thinner uterine lining, which means it could be inhospitable to the implantation of a new human being. So a lot of people are unaware of this possible consequence of the pill. More fundamentally, I think what your question is getting at, if I heard you right, is what is the difference, even if there's not an abortifacient effect, let's say you have a barrier method, like a condom that's preventing sperm from getting to the egg. What is the difference between that and something like natural family planning, which the church would permit a couple to use? The very important difference is natural family planning works with how God designed our bodies. God designed the man to always have fertility. God designed the woman to not always have fertility. He designed a season for us to be infertile every month, and then a short window for a woman to be fertile. And so using natural family planning, determining when to have sex or when not to have sex based on the natural fertility of your body is using your body as it was designed. But when you use something like a condom or any other type of birth control, what you're doing is you're engaging in an act of sex that has fertility tied into it, and you're suppressing that fertility, whether you're withholding the sperm in the case of the man or you're suppressing the egg in the case of the woman. And that goes against the nature of how God designed our bodies. We can look at it this way. Throughout the scriptures, people were maimed and sick, and they would go to Jesus for healing. He saw the body out of order and essentially reordered it to health. But Jesus never found a healthy person and disfigured them or created a pathology within their body. So when we look at fertility, that's a sign of our bodies working right. And so to suppress that, to deny that, to change that, is to do the exact opposite of what Jesus did in his encounters with people. Is that helpful?
Yes, I appreciate that explanation.
Pat, thank you very much for that call, and it gives me a chance to plug too. If you're willing to do a little more reading on this, Dr. Stacy Trusenko's chemist, Dr. Stacy Trusenko's has an article up on our website right now, just published in the online magazine Catholic Answers Magazine Online, and it's "Can Contraception Cause Abortions?" So that it's a technical explanation or a scientific explanation of just exactly what Stephanie was just talking about some of the effects of contraception on a woman's body and what that means. But also she gets into then a discussion of what a virtuous life is. So you might take a look at that if you'd like more information, or if anyone would like more information on how contraception actually works, what its connection to abortion is, and some ways to think about the body differently. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. It is a pro-life open forum with Stephanie Gray today. Stephanie, you also debate sometimes, right? You get involved in debates.
So, yes, I was just a few months ago, I was at Cornell University debating for philosophy professor. And the next 3 months, February, March, and April, I have a debate each month on university campuses, including debating an abortionist.
And how stressful is that for you? Like, is it stressful, or do you – I do not do debates because mostly I can't remember what I was going to say once I get there. So I'm just curious. You're debating some of the best minds in the world from the opposite direction. How stressful do you find that?
You know, generally, I kind of thrive in that environment. Uh-huh. I guess it's a special grace that the Lord has given me to be able to do it. It certainly takes a lot of preparation, researching the mindset of the person you're debating. A philosophy professor presents generally a very different argument from an abortionist. So, with good research and prayer, it works well.
We'll get some more information on upcoming debates when we come back then. Stephanie Gray is our guest. It is a pro-life open forum today. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. If you'd like to talk with Stephanie about any aspect of the pro-life position, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I want you to have such confidence in the Lord that you'll find such hope at seeing the beauty of the Lord, the majesty of God. What did our Lord say, huh? If your sins are as scarlet, what? What's going to happen? They shall be made white as snow.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a very special offer for all of you interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, available for just $5 a copy. That's a savings of over 70%. I wrote this book specifically with you in mind to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue and give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, for just $5 a copy, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Whatever I have learned, writes Catholic Answers founder Carl Kidding, I have learned from the masters of the craft. In his new book, Booked for Life, a bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist, Carl gives future generations a roadmap of what it takes and what it means to become a Catholic apologist. In the way only Carl can, he recounts numerous real-life situations he has encountered in his long career that illustrate the apologetic lessons he's learned. Then, drawing on a lifetime of experience, Carl reveals the books that helped him learn to defend the Catholic faith. Order your copy of Booked for Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Stephanie Gray, speaks all over the world about pro-life issues. She's the author of Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth, and the co-founder of the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform. And we're very pleased to have her here to answer your questions about any aspect of the pro-life position, whether it's something you need some clarification on, some help explaining to someone else, or maybe it's something that you'd like to challenge with us with that maybe you think we have not thought of or an angle we haven't taken. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. We go now to Jay in Canada, listening on EWTN. Jay, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Stephanie, I live in Canada, and it's my understanding that we don't even have an abortion law. And, you know, it basically is one of those things. But I'm wondering, because you worked for a Canadian organization for pro-life, do you know, because you never hear about anything about, you know, anybody fighting to change the rules and to create new laws, but have, do you know where the Canadian government is going, or where if there's a group that actually is trying to limit the abortion, and as far as when they can have and the number of weeks and what have you? Are you aware of anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. There's both bad news and good news. So the bad news is, as you've rightly pointed out, there aren't any laws restricting abortion in Canada. It can happen through all 9 months of pregnancy. It's paid for with Canadian tax dollars and can happen for any reason, such as if a couple want a male child and they're pregnant with a female child, they can have a paid for abortion in Canada. There are a couple organizations that are working to try to change the law and create legal protections for preborn children. So one such organization is called Right Now, and their philosophy is we need to make change right now. And they're working across the country, both provincially and nationally, to try to work towards pro-life legislation. And there's another organization called We Need a Law, and they are doing similar parallel work that's very complementary to what Right Now is doing. And then beyond that, you have organizations like the one I used to work for that was mentioned that I co-founded, CCBR, where they're more education-based, trying to shift the mind of the masses so that there is support for the organizations like Right Now and We Need a Law, who try to get a political, you know, public policy change once you have that public opinion shift. So being a fellow Canadian, I certainly would encourage you to look up these organizations and see how you can get involved.
How's that sound, Jay?
Sounds good.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Jay. 888-318-7884 is the number. Sometimes you almost get the impression that Canada, with its embrace now more and more of suicide and euthanasia, that that they're heading off a cliff. But it's good to hear there's so many good people in Canada, and an intelligent conversation will in fact convince lots of people. We just have to keep having that conversation,
right? And I think we need to remember, you know, from the beginning of the world, there's always been sin, right? Adam and Eve, right. You know, created the original sin, and then you have Cain killing Abel, and we've got murder, we have bloodshed, and every period of history we see injustice, we see attacks on human life, but every period of history there are also bright, vibrant lights that are trying to shine in the darkness and resist these injustices. And so we have to be that wherever we are, and try to be a force for good amidst the darkness.
Amen. Well said. John in Pleasanton, Kansas, listening on 93.7 FM, you are on with Stephanie Gray. Your question, John.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. And Stephanie, thanks for all the work that you're doing to promote life. I guess the question that I have, and what I want to explore is this intellectually honest? But to me, there seems to be a parallel between kind of the evil of abortion today and the argument, if you would, that a child is property, in essence, of the mother, and slavery back in the day. And just, you know, I mean, if you were to poll folks today about should slavery be legal, it would, you'll never get 100% of people to agree, but I think 99.9% would agree that absolutely not. But to me, as I kind of look at the two evils, it seems like there are a lot of parallels. So I'm wondering, is there literature out there or any books that I could be directed to? And it, I guess then, is the argument intellectually honest? And if so, why do we not hear more about that parallel,
Stephanie?
Of those two evils?
How about that, slavery?
Sure. I think you raise a very valid point. It's a point that I've done and raised in the history of my pro-life work, and that is that we need to learn from the past. And anytime we can find common ground with someone we're dialoguing with and bridge from the common ground to the uncommon ground to hopefully make that common as well, the better. So when you start with something like slavery and you ask someone, do you believe slavery is wrong? And they say yes, then you ask why? And they say, because you can't treat another human being as though they're property, as though they're an object. So then we say, okay, well, if you agree as I do that we may not treat human beings as property, as objects, why then would we permit abortion when that also involves treating a human being as property or as an object? And then if they respond by saying, well, the fetus isn't a human being, but a slave is, so then we can ask, well, what is your evidence for the fetus not being a human being? If the parents are human, what else could the offspring be other than a human being? even take the slave that they would protect, that they think is equal. When did that individual begin his or her life? Did the slave become human at the age of 5, at the point of birth, or at the moment of fertilization? And so you can use that, element of history and people's revulsion towards what we did in the past, and bring that into the abortion discussion in order to show they should have the same, feelings of revulsion about abortion and about the treatment of the preborn child as though they're disposable, the way historically that happened with victims of the slave trade.
John,
in terms of books. So, you know what, there's several books that actually look at parallels between abortion, the slave trade, and the Holocaust. I'm drawing a blank on names, but if you just Google it, there'll be some great pro-life books out there that elaborate on the point that you very validly raised.
You know, John, thank you very much for that call. Stephanie, as you're speaking, I'm thinking in the early days of the abortion debate, you could always say, well, it's a women's rights against the kind of thing. But people still say that. But today we're creating human beings in laboratories, mm-hmm. and growing them through the embryonic stage for no other reason than for scientists to study them and to do experiments on them. That is slavery. That's just outright slavery. You've taken a human being and made it the object for someone else to use.
It is using another person. And what's interesting about that is this: on one hand, people will say, we don't know when life begins. We can do an abortion because the fetus isn't alive. And yet, on the other hand, there's the creation of life in a lab, as you pointed out, whether people are going to implant the embryo or whether they're just going to do destructive research on the embryo. But the point is, we know when life begins because those in the business of making life are doing it in the lab, and they're trying to create the moment of sperm egg fusion, the moment of fertilization. So therefore, to then claim we don't know when life begins and abortion doesn't kill a life is intellectually dishonest based on other activities that are immoral.
Right.
Our society.
It strikes me that even if you were one of those people who was convinced of a woman's right to choose and all that, that's totally unrelated from this. I'm not one of those people. I'm not convinced of that. Mm-hmm. We have a right to choose to take someone else's life. But even if you were utterly convinced of that, what creating babies in labs has nothing to do with that. Creating babies in labs so that you can study them is just outright exertion of raw power over another human being.
And again, we look at history to see that humanity has done that before, and we look back and recoil at that. You know, you look at during the Holocaust, the hypothermia experiments done on the Jews and other victims. And we say, goodness, you can't experiment on one group of humans just to get information that would be beneficial to another group of humans. So if that principle applies in general, then it applies specifically in the context of embryonic research, the way it applies specifically in the context of the Holocaust.
Kathleen in Midland, Michigan, listening on AM 1440. Kathleen, you are on with Stephanie Gray. Your question, please.
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. Okay, my question is, what do I say to people who say, what about if we take away abortion, then we'll end up with more children in foster care, and who's going to take care of all these people, all these children in foster care, because there are too many kids in foster care and there aren't enough people to adopt them?
Yes, it's an important question to address. And I think one way to address it is to say, I agree with you that it's a problem that there are children who are not in forever homes. You know, I agree with you, it's a problem that they're bounced around from one foster home to another. Adoption is the ideal option. And because we both recognize this is a problem and there are some very tragic situations where children are being treated poorly in the foster care system, would it ever be ethical to end the life of a born child in the foster care system because the circumstances of that child are quite miserable? And of course, the person's going to say, well, no, you can't kill someone in the foster care system. So then I would ask, why then would we ever say it's acceptable to kill the preborn child because they may at some point in the future be placed in the foster care system? And if they respond and say, well, wait, that's different. You know, a child in the foster care system is a human being. An embryo or a fetus isn't a human yet. If that's the answer you get, what that shows is we really need to convince the person that the embryo and the fetus are human beings. is just not the foster care system, that science has established life begins at fertilization, that two human parents will only produce human offspring, that because the embryo and fetus are growing, we know that they are alive. And so going through those basic facts can enable us to say, as much as there are problems, killing shouldn't be the solution to the problems that we face in society. And then you can also point out that there are couples waiting and willing to adopt. And there are other people who, if they carried their pregnancies to term, wouldn't place their child in foster care or an adoptive home, but actually do have the support around them to parent the child on their own with a loving community. And it's often convenience that causes them to reject carrying to term. But if they actually carried to term, they would have a supportive community.
Okay, Kathleen?
Yes, okay, thank you.
Great, thank you very much, Kathleen. We have to take a quick break. Stephanie Gray here with us for the rest of the hour. Next hour, Dr. Edward Shree will be here, and we're going to talk about having your life transformed in discipleship to Christ. He's got a brand new book about that just out. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or the DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Whatever I have learned, writes Catholic Answers founder Carl Keating, I have learned from the masters of the craft. In his new book, Booked for Life, a bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist, Carl gives future generations a roadmap of what it takes and what it means to become a Catholic apologist. In the way only Carl can, he recounts numerous real-life situations he has encountered in his long career that illustrate the apologetic lessons he's learned. Then, drawing on a lifetime of experience, Carl reveals the books that helped him learn to defend the Catholic faith. Order your copy of Booked for Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
I told you it was going to be a super good Wednesday. Dr. Shree coming up next hour talking about discipleship to Jesus and how that can transform your life and really bring healing and into your life and a real change of heart. Many of us are waiting for that. And he says, well, there's a way to think about discipleship that can really, really transform your life. Get you out of those stuck places into new places that Christ wants you to go. This hour, Stephanie Gray, our guest, and we are taking all comers with questions about pro-life issues. It's a pro-life open forum. 888-318-7884 is our number. We have another Kathleen on the line. This Kathleen is in northern Minnesota listening on Real Presence Radio. Kathleen, your question for Stephanie.
Yes, hi. I was in a conversation with three other women, and they were discussing their abortion views, and I did not have an answer. I just stood there and listened, and I said a few things, but I wished I would have had more to say, and I was going to put across a couple of things and hoping that I would just turn the radio off then and listen to your response once I ask the questions. But one woman said that that she was feeling that the United States should support money for other countries in this world for abortion because, she said, her mother had jumped from a height in order to try to, you know, end the abortion. She said that's what the women did over in her country so they wouldn't have to be pregnant. And she said that was, I don't know, she said it didn't obviously work for her mother because there she stood. But, and then another one beside her said that what switched her over to be pro-choice was the fact that the statistics were, and she gave the example of Texas, so I don't know if this is true or not, that Texas, once they legalized abortion, the number of abortions that were that took place were fewer when it was legal than when it was illegal.
All right, Kathleen, let's take that second one. Can we start there, Stephanie?
Sure. Yeah, the reality is, I can't speak to Texas specifically, but if you look at, quite frankly, the abortion statistics in the United States and around the world, when abortion became legal, abortion numbers have dramatically increased. So they have not stayed the same. They have not gone down. They have increased to the point that there are a million abortions every year in America, and there weren't a million illegal abortions prior to 1973. So the legalization has resulted in it becoming very common. And I think, you know, we can look to countries where abortion does not happen, such as Ireland, which has one of the best maternal mortality rates in the world, better than the United States, in fact. So there is an environment where if people said, well, if abortion was illegal, you know, women are going to die. On the contrary, in that country where abortion is currently illegal, although there are efforts to try to change that right now, but in that country where it's currently illegal, you have very good maternal healthcare. And in other parts of the world, we don't necessarily see that. I would make the point that where abortion became legal, such as in South Africa, maternal mortality has increased rather than decreased. So I think for people to make the claim that, you know, when it becomes legal, it's going to be safer for women, that isn't necessarily the case. The more fundamental principle is, what does abortion do? If it ends the life of an innocent human being, then we may not legalize that just to try to improve the circumstances of those who are born. You know, if we really care about women, when a woman is in crisis, we're going to want to get to the root of why she's in crisis. We're going to want to ask her, why do you want an abortion? Why are you so desperate that you would, in fact, harm yourself and not just your preborn child, that you would put yourself in a risky environment or risky a situation of grave danger through perhaps an illegal abortion with someone who's not skilled at what they're doing. And so when we can identify what their fears are, then we should work to alleviate the circumstances and the suffering that they're in rather than work to eliminate their child. There are ways to help women in crisis that don't actually involve killing an innocent human being. So it's not, you know, we have abortion or women are going to resort to desperate measures. It's possible to not have abortion and to help women so well that they also don't resort to desperate measures.
Okay, Kathleen?
Beautiful. Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm going to keep moving as quickly as I can because we got lots of calls still to get to. So we go to Italy in Midland, Texas, listening on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Italy, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Yes, mine has to do more with the fertility side. I would like to know what the views of the Catholic Church are on taking fertility drugs.
The general standard the Church communicates is that it may be ethical to replace, aid the marital act, but not replace the marital act. So, for example, in vitro fertilization would not be ethical because that means the human being is created outside sexual intimacy and instead being created in a lab. So that replaces the sexual act and therefore isn't ethical. But there can be times where the sexual act is aided. So, for example, if a woman isn't ovulating, that's a sign of her body working improperly. There's a pathology there that needs to be corrected. So for her to take medicine that would cause her body to ovulate is to actually restore her body to its natural healthy state so that when she then engages in sexual activity, there's the possibility that she could now conceive a child. So that would be an example of aiding the sexual act, not replacing it in order to create a life. That would be acceptable with the important caveat that the amount of medicine and drugs given to her to aid her body in ovulating not be too high so that she would unnaturally ovulate a large quantity of eggs. Because if she releases a large quantity of eggs, all of those eggs could then get fertilized through one act of sexual intercourse. And if she then gets pregnant with 5 or 6 embryos, that puts her life in danger. It puts the embryos' lives in danger. So it's important that she be given a quantity of a medical intervention that would only cause her body to release 1 or 2 eggs, which would naturally happen in a woman's cycle.
Okay, Italy?
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. We'll go now to Tony. And another Canadian. Boy, you are bringing the Canadians out of the woodwork, Stephanie.
You know, we're a friendly bunch.
Yeah, that's right. Listening on Ave Maria Radio, Tony, your question for Stephanie Gray.
Hi, Stephanie. My question is based on pro-life being a movement from the beginning of the baby towards the end of life, rather than, like today we hear on the radio mostly about the babies being aborted, rather than also looking at it as a life movement whereby families are supposed to, we talk about the family life too, because the poverty does create abortions. So like we have to look at it as a bigger object. You have to have bigger objective rather than just life at the beginning, but family also has to be considered. And that's what's going on in the minority communities, and that's why abortions are pretty high there, because family formation hasn't started properly. And also, we have politicized this movement such that it's mostly Republican, rather than saying we all are human and we should all value life. Not Republican, not Democrat. We are all equal. Thanks very much.
Sure. You know, there is, certainly is a great need to help people in the circumstances they're in to alleviate their suffering so they don't resort to eliminating their child. And this is where I would say the movement has actually done a very good job with its pregnancy care centers, its homes for pregnant women, with religious orders like the Sisters of Life who allow pregnant women to live with them and allow them to live with them for a period of time after birth as well with the child, as the sisters work to help the woman get on her feet, get a job, go to school and receive an education. So there are some exciting and positive things happening in that regard. Certainly there's always more that can be done, but there is some good news happening there. And I would say that certainly we need to value all life, and that's ultimately what the message of the church is about. The gospel message is about loving our neighbor as we love ourselves. The pro-life movement has taken on a very specific cause of the cause of the babies because this is such a widespread injustice. And there was this sense that a group of people need to focus specifically on that. The way if someone's fighting cancer, they focus specifically on cancer. If someone's fighting AIDS, they focus specifically on AIDS. And when you focus, you know, like become a specialist in educating people on one subject, it doesn't mean there aren't other important subjects, but there is that acknowledgement that he who fights everywhere fights nowhere. And one organization or one cause cannot necessarily take everything on. But something as big as the church, the Catholic Church, which has 1 billion members around the world, is large enough that it is living the gospel message, not just on one issue, but on all issues, that communicates a message that we need to value the dignity of persons in all ages and all stages and work to create a society that is truly just.
Tony, you still there? Does that work for you?
Yeah, but the political movement, there is a political movement like that identifies this with maybe Republicans mostly, and whenever you turn on Catholic radio, it is more biased towards Republican.
Can I just clarify something, Tony? So are you saying we need more pro-life Democrats?
No, not only Democrats, but we shouldn't be tagging it with Republicans. We should be tagging it with humanity, not politics. Because politics, when it comes into the game, we're trying to hide the other things that Republicans do bad. And that's actually a turnoff on most Democrats who might turn into pro-lifers.
I see. It's up to people to choose to be pro-life or not, however. I'm not exactly sure, what's the practical thing you're asking us to do?
And when we talk mostly as Republicans rather than as human beings. We are not political. Christ was not political. It's a Christian movement is totally away from politics. I understand politics does help life, but we cannot ignore the errors of the Republicans, too.
Mm. Okay, Tony, I'm sorry we hear the music, so we have to get going, though. But I thought we did the whole hour without talking politics till we got there, unless I am mistaken. Did we mention that earlier? And I missed it?
Sorry, I missed that.
Oh, okay. Oh, you couldn't hear me. Okay.
Yeah.
We've had a little bit of sound issues this hour. Stephanie Gray, the author of Love Unleashes Life, Abortion and the Art of Communicating Truth. If you would like to know more about Stephanie, just go to loveunleasheslife.com. I'm sorry I didn't get to follow up. I wanted to hear more about the debates coming up. But people can find about that on the website. Is that correct?
They can. Loveunleasheslife.com.
Thank you for a very, very helpful hour. Really appreciate it, Stephanie Gray. Dr. Edward Shree, next hour, we're going to talk about transforming your life through discipleship to Christ. We'll be right back after this.